To begin today's sermon, I would like to play for you a brief excerpt from a jazz pianist named Keith Jarrett. Now, it's a recording from 1975 where he would show up in a concert hall and he would just go. Everything's improvised. And so we drop in on him as he's beginning to develop a theme. You can dance or clap if you want, but it's really something. And he keeps going like that for an hour and 11 minutes. The people, did you hear him all going, yeah, whoa. He's surprised. He was feeling it. Everyone was feeling it. And the people who attended this concert in Cologne, Germany in 1975, they describe it as this magnetic force that's pulling them in into something sacred. If you listen to the language describing this moment, it's holy and spiritual and mystical. It's language of the Spirit. The amazing part is that this miracle almost didn't happen. The story goes that there was this young 17-year-old girl named Vera Brandis who was a jazz enthusiast, and she loved Keith Jarrett and heard that he was playing around her vicinity, so she wrote him and asked him to come play at their little concert hall in Cologne, Germany. So Keith Jarrett says, sure. And on the night of the performance, as it's pouring down rain, Mr. Jarrett arrives a couple hours early after riding in the car all day to meet the piano. That's what musicians like to do, like to play the piano so they get to know it, so they know what it he's capable of. Now, you need to know that Keith Jarrett is one of the most particular musicians out there. He would hand cough drops to his audience so nobody would clear their throat during his show. He was also very particular about the kind of piano he played. Only a Steinway would do. A grand piano. But there was some miscommunication, and when he got to the stage to meet his piano, it wasn't a Steinway or even a grand piano. It was a baby grand piano. I know what some of you are saying, oh no, but there's a difference. Oh yeah, there's a difference, says Jonathan. So he sits down to play it, and he realizes some of the keys are sticking. The bass, the pedals on the floor and his feet, they don't work. All the keys in the upper register, grossly out of tune. There's only a few bass notes that function the way that they're supposed to. So he says, that's enough. I've had it. Tell everybody, concert's canceled. Of course, we know he changed his mind because we just listened to a recording. But notice his first instinct was to say, nope, I'm not doing it. I wonder if that's our first instinct sometimes when we're asked to do something that is a little out of tune with what we normally do. Say, nope, I'm not doing it. Maybe you remember the first year I was here. I think we can look back on it and laugh now, but there'd be these moments where I'd ask you to turn to a neighbor that you didn't really know and have a conversation around a question. Do you remember that? Do you remember the audible groan that went with it? Afterwards, people said, wow, there was a holy moment there. I learned something new, but it took getting past that first initial response of, I'm not doing that. Maybe this summer as we meet in the fellowship hall around tables, maybe something comes in us. Our first initial impulse is, nope, I'm not doing that. Maybe it's just me who does that. Whenever something's a little different, a little outside the comfort zone, isn't it interesting? It's Peter's first response, too. Do you remember the story? As the sheet's coming down, there's all these animals that aren't on a Jewish menu. And a voice says, Peter, eat it. And what does Peter say? I'm not doing it. And the voice repeats three times. What you have called unclean, I've made clean. And then there's some men who are knocking at the door to bring him to Cornelius' house, and he goes with them, and something opens up. He speaks, and the Holy Spirit falls on them just like it fell on his Jewish sisters and brothers. But his first initial response is, I'm not doing that. And now he stands in front of this high church council. Peter's always getting into trouble. And he's in trouble again for eating with these unclean Gentiles. And so they say, explain yourself. And Peter says one sentence. His argument is one sentence. Who am I to hinder God? It's the Greek word kaleo, hinder, to obstruct, to get in the path of. Who am I to kaleo God? I've spoken about how a few Sundays ago our session met with a transgender support group who meets in the fellowship hall every other week. But what I didn't mention was that before we did this, we all had name tags, and we'd write our names down, and then we would write our pronouns underneath them. So if we identified as male, we wrote down he, him. If we identified as female, we wrote she, her. For those who were gender fluid, they would write they, them. It was the first time any of us, most of us, had ever had to write down our pronouns under our names. And for some of us, it was the first time we called somebody they, them. It's a little outside the comfort zone. But then, as we're reflecting on this, one of our elders said, you know, I was a little hesitant to do this at first, but I had a really good time. Imagine that's how Peter felt. He was a little hesitant at first, but he sits down with these people who are normal, eating food, celebrating, having a good time. And now he stands before the high council using one-liner as his argument. Who am I to hinder? Then comes the surprise of the story. What does the church do? What does the church do? They don't discipline him, not this time. They get silence, and then what do? They celebrate! Just like we do with our teachers, and when, as Ruthie, as she blossoms into the world, just as we did when Mel and Leah and Ann and Margaret and Jeff and Ray and anybody else says, we're getting married. We say, the family's getting bigger. Just as when somebody joins the church or a child is baptized or an adult is baptized, we celebrate. God has broken the mold, they say. God even includes the Gentiles. This is wonderful. Now that's the surprise of the story, is the church reacts that way. Because normally they do get disciplined. And they do get criticized. But no, surprise. Now they could have said, but we don't want to be known as the Gentile church. They could have said, look at Leviticus and Deuteronomy. It says right there, we have 3,000 years of tradition saying the Gentiles aren't clean. They could have even used the church's 7 most lethal words. We've never done it like that before. But instead, they celebrate. They open up. It could have been the miracle that never happened. But it did. And it still does. As the rain poured down in Cologne, Germany, Keith Jarrett, after walking out of the concert hall, he sits in his car and waits for his driver to come in to taxi him back to the airport. When he hears a knock on his window, standing outside in the pouring rain is this young girl, Vera Brandis, who organized the event. She's drenched, dripping wet. The rain is crisscrossing across her face. And she says, Mr. Jarrett, there's 1,400 people who've come here to hear you play. Please. something opened up in him. He says, maybe he's even thinking, who am I to hinder? He says, only for you. On the way in, he gets this idea. He tells his manager, let's record this show as an example to send to other concert venues for what happens when Keith Jarrett gets the wrong piano. And to this day, that recording is the single most sought-after solo jazz piano album of all time. Keith Jarrett, despite piano with sticking keys, bass pedals that don't work, an upper register that's grossly out of tune, and bass notes that don't function properly, despite the mess he had been handed, despite him resisting at first, eventually he embraced it. And it soared. Sometimes the Holy Spirit hands the church a mess to figure out. And I feel very fortunate to be with a group of people who have the spiritual maturity to embrace the mess and to know that just because we might not like something doesn't mean it's not good for us. Who are we to kaleo God? The church could have been the miracle that almost didn't happen, but it did, and it still does. God's Spirit is still in us and among us, in spite of us. And for that, we celebrate.